a COVID hotspot and a border community in crisis. Both are labels applied to Yuma this past year. My guest today says neither description quite gets to the truth. I'm Lou Gumm. This is Arizona Edition on KAWC. Doug Nichols is in his second four-year term as mayor of Yuma, a border community that finds itself in the headlines over the border again following a year in which it was among the top spots for COVID transmission. Nichols says Governor Doug Ducey's measured approach to the COVID-19 pandemic largely worked, and he says he's not too concerned about whether you call the increase in migrants released into local communities a crisis or not, as long as something is done to fix it. Mayor Nichols, I appreciate your time. No new cases reported for Yuma County. We're talking on a Thursday, just to be clear. This will air Friday morning. No new cases reported for Yuma County today. Perhaps more importantly, no deaths. Before we dive in a bit to the year of COVID, the state reports over 115,000 vaccinations in Yuma County, though some people are still reluctant. Have you been vaccinated, and can you talk about your decision?
Yes, I have been vaccinated. And, you know, the decision was really part of just looking for, well, to the science of what the vaccines are, and is it something that is going to be detrimental to my health in and of itself as a vaccine, or is the greater herd immunity that we're trying to obtain, you know, beneficial? And I know there's a lot of speculation on long-term impacts, but I didn't really see any strong evidence that that was the case, and so. Getting the vaccine was just made sense for me. As my personal decision, it made sense for me.
And can I ask you if everything went okay, or if you had a reaction at all?
My reaction was slight. I was very fortunate. I had a small fever. I didn't have any ache in my arm. I wasn't down for really any period of time. So I was very blessed that it was very minor.
And what is your message to people who might have concerns or outright mistrust for the vaccine?
Well, I think everyone needs to make that decision for themselves. But we truly need to make the decision and not just write it off as, well, I read a headline once, or there's this group that thinks one way or the other. And that's for and against getting the vaccine. Get into truly to what the data is and the true science and information is. To look to see, is it right for you, and how your decision plays to the greater community. And, you know, what do you want to do? You want to travel? Sometimes there's going to be countries that are going to make different decisions for their citizens than the United States necessarily would make for our own. And so you need to weigh all those factors involved. I went to Panama and Suriname. I guess it's been 2 years now, and I had to get some vaccinations in order to go there. I wanted to go. I got the vaccination. So I think we just need to not worry about the hype, and we need to focus on what the actual information is.
Throughout the pandemic, Arizona Governor Doug Ducey often said that the state was employing a measured response. That measured response actually precluded any local action by you or the county in terms of mitigation efforts. Meanwhile, until recently and for much of the past year, Yuma and Yuma County, we were at the top or near the top for virus hotspots in the country. Was there anything you wanted to do in terms of curfews, closures, but could not based on the governor's orders? Or were you satisfied with what was coming out of the state?
Well, I guess I'd answer that in a little bit different of an approach, in that I'm not quite sure the numbers really reflected the condition, because we had, during the peaks of COVID, we had a lot of people in that aren't part of our normal census. We had winter visitors, we had our field workers. And so I think our numbers were skewed, because we had infections and unfortunately deaths from those populations that were reflected back on our base population. So I think some of those statistics are a little bit off. I do believe the governor was approaching it from a measured response. I do think more local input would have been a stronger response from the variety of conditions that were across the state. And so I think that's really, I guess, the only thing that I would have asked the governor to do, and did ask the governor to do, is to try to get some more local input. But he's got, you know, a state of almost 8 million people to try to balance what local input looks like.
Do you think conditions today sort of back up that that things were handled well? I mean, are you satisfied with the way things are today, the way the vaccine rollout is going?
Well, the vaccine rollout's going well. I think that's been something that the state really stepped up when they opened up the pod here a few weeks ago. People in Yuma just need now to go. And actually, we need volunteers. So if there's people that maybe they've already been vaccinated, or if you haven't, if you volunteer, you go and get vaccinated that day, you won't volunteer. So I think that's been very, very beneficial. The response statewide, you know, it's unfortunate we've had as many deaths and as much suffering as we have had. I'm not sure how much more of that was avoidable. I'm not a medical doctor and don't have that kind of training to know. But, you know, I think the thing that we need to look for is where we're headed, and I think we're all headed in the right direction.
I was going to ask this just to wrap up, but since you kind of mentioned it there, how should Yuma honor those deaths in the days and months, perhaps years ahead?
Well, I think that's something we need to talk about as a community. How do we want to remember them? Or do we remember them individually? Do we try to come together with some sort of memorial? There's been some ideas kicked around. I think the hospital did a great event where they remembered those people through a whole week. Of course, some people have died since then, so maybe we do something again when this thing wraps up. I think that's something that is going to be personal for each person, and I think we need to be careful not just to slap just some ceremony that we've concocted together, but really something that would be meaningful to people and their families and their friends that lost those true critical people in their lives.
From your perspective, your seat as mayor of the city of Yuma, financially speaking, how did the city of Yuma fare this past year? Where does it sit financially now with news that new federal funds are on the table from the American Rescue Plan? Are any of that slated to come here? For what purpose?
So through the pandemic, we're at the very beginning of the pandemic, administration really buckled down and they looked at the program and the remaining budget, not really knowing what was going to be happening. And so a lot of spending was held off and cut eventually. We offered early retirements to those that were kind of on the bubble. It just is a cost-saving measure. We ended up saving, through a lot of different processes, over $11 million on last year's budget. So having that as a beginning part, and then the $10 to $11 million we received for the First CARES Act really helped. But the sales tax was kind of the surprising thing, and a lot of cities experienced this, where people were staying home, so they were spending money at home. And when they ordered online, because of the way the state passed what we call the Wayfarer Act a couple sessions ago at the state legislature and the governor signed, the sales tax still stayed in Yuma. So the sales tax part of the income for the city has remained fairly strong. We've had a slight downturn in just this last quarter, but nothing that rattles any concern at this point. The true economic impact really comes down to those individual businesses that have depended upon tourism industry or those things that you can't really supplant with an online presence. Those are the elements of our economy that are a little bit tougher to put together. But the current funding coming from the government, we will, over a two-year time period, receive $20 million. Those funds have not been allocated yet because the Treasury Department hasn't identified the rules on how you can spend it and where you can spend it, what items you can spend it on. It is one-time money, so we want to make sure what we're doing with it makes sense from that perspective. Like if you take on a long-term debt, but you only have one-time money, or a long-term liability and you only have one-time money, you got to find how to fund that in the subsequent years. So we got to be smart about how we do that. And we also want to make sure that we're supporting our local economy. So there's a lot to be figured out in that arena yet.
And for those of us who have sort of a home budget, does it work out to be this money is surplus, or does it work out that it sort of just supplants what might have come before? You said we actually did a little better than expected. So is it sort of bonus?
Right. Yeah, I don't know that I'd call it bonus, but it is definitely needs to be looked at as either plugging a hole that we're expecting to recover in a subsequent next year or two, or on one-time expenditures that we really need to get done, especially if they would provide protection against something similar happening in the future as far as a pandemic or some sort of local concern or emergency. So I think those are the way we need to think about it is it's true dollars that we need to just take our time to figure out how the best way is to spend it, to invest it into our community.
Well, has there been time yet for the city and you and your cohorts to sit around and think about where some of those holes might be in terms of what was exposed during COVID? Are there already some ideas brewing for where you could upgrade city services or find a new way to do things?
You know, at this point, I think we're still kind of putting things together for this next budget session. And so I believe those kind of discussions are happening with the staff, at the staff level at this point. So I'm not really aware of those, but definitely it would be something that will come up in our budget discussions here in the next month.
My guest today is Yuma Mayor Doug Nichols. Since mid-February, thousands of refugees have been released into the Yuma area after being apprehended by the U.S. Border Patrol, something Nichols has called a humanitarian crisis. Let's move on to the border. This past year, and even before, we're especially partisan. Lines were drawn on COVID based on party. The vitriol was amped up. The border is another topic that generates a lot of feelings and a lot of commentary. First, let's talk about this language of crisis being used to describe the situation at the border near our community. And as a descriptor of our community, I noted earlier that I've noted in this community that there's kind of a leaning here among leaders to focus on good news. But this is a topic that seems to be to bring out some doomsayers. Let's talk about this language of crisis on the border. I've heard you refer to it as a humanitarian crisis. Do you think that's an important distinction?
I guess I don't get too caught up on words. I know that's the national discussion right now. I look at it this way. You know, FEMA gets involved in disasters, right? That's their thing. That's what they exist for. So when a hurricane's coming towards the Texas coast, they see the hurricane coming and they start to prepare and they mobilize and they get ready to engage. Well, whether you see now or something in the future, it's undeniable that there is an immigrant wave. I think we're in the middle of it, hitting this country, and FEMA's engaged. So it's hard to say it's status quo if your emergency management organization is in the middle of it. So from that perspective, if you want to use the word crisis, if you want to use the word emergency, or if you want to use the word disaster, those all to me mean the same thing. But at the end of the day, it comes down to what these thousands and thousands and thousands of migrants are experiencing from a humanitarian side. And if it's not correctly managed and organized, what kind of humanitarian issues we'd end up having in this country. And I think those are the topics we need to really focus on, because whether you call it a crisis or a situation, those person-to-person issues, those humanitarian issues, are the issues that affect real people.
How often and by whom are you updated about migrant or refugee drop-offs in the community, and what are the most recent figures that you have?
We are roughly at about 2,800 people released since, I think it was February 15th was our first release. The great majority of those, including for the last 3-4 weeks, have all been accounted for with transportation through the nonprofit network that has been set up to COVID test everyone, quarantine those that are positive, and those that are negative, transport them to regional shelters. So from this perspective, things are being organized to try to really help the basic and immediate needs of those that are crossing. But I do get updates from the Border Patrol whenever I ask, whenever I need, or whenever anything changes. And then there's a network of there's probably two meetings a day if you started to try to count them, which I can't possibly make all of them. But in order to stay up with what's happening in the nonprofit sector from the federal government side, mostly, they're all Zoom meetings at this point.
Does any part of that national rhetoric concern you, especially when elected officials from faraway places come and get tours and hold press events? And many humans, like myself, can point to questions from family or others in other parts of the country that, you know, call us and ask us, are we safe, based on what they're hearing? Does any of that concern you?
Well, I think the more people who can come and see what the actual situation is important. And because we have great nonprofits that are engaging right now, the you and I here sitting in the community, we don't feel or even understand what's being experienced along the border and what the stories that these migrants bring with them as they engage the nonprofits, or the travesty that Amberlee's Place hears and works with the migrants who have been raped and abused. There's a lot that's going on that we as a community don't see because it's not happening right in front of us, but it's still happening. So I think the more people that can see what's happening on the border is important for them to get a firsthand understanding. That way they're not necessarily influenced by some news headline or someone, you know, arguing over whether it's a crisis or not. They get to see and they get to evaluate that for themselves. And I think that's what's important is having that kind of disclosure so that people can understand it. That's really kind of the main point of making sure people come to Yuma and to all the, you know, the border communities and see how it varies from Nogales to Texas to Yuma, because we're all experiencing something different. And that's the only way you can really do it is get to see it.
A member of the Catholic Kino Border Initiative spoke to us recently and told us that her faith dictates that she welcome people across the border, see it as an opportunity. Ultimately, with migration on the increase worldwide due to economics, climate change, other factors, does America really need to rethink how we welcome people at the border? And what role do border cities have in that?
Well, I definitely think we need to talk about how do we welcome people, because I really think it needs to happen way before the border. I think that's the mistake when you wait for people to come to the border, because then you've got a situation right in front of you. Whereas if we can engage in the home countries, if our embassies and our consulates can provide the information and the ability to declare an asylum if they truly deem an asylum and have the asylum proceedings happen remotely. We've been doing that well for over a year, so why not employ that so that people don't make these dangerous trips only then to be turned back, so people don't put their lives in danger and their well-being in danger and their monetary wealth of whatever they do have in danger, that we take care of that situation in the countries that they're in. And if it's an economic situation, that's not a reason for an asylum. That might be a reason for immigration. So then let's begin the legal immigration process in their home country and not while they're waiting at the border. That is a more humane approach to me, and that to me is the more Christian approach to make sure that we're addressing the needs as early as we can without putting people in more danger than they need to be.
Got just a few minutes left. I want to talk about your State of the City address. What was the tone you were trying to strike this year, and what message were you looking to send?
Well, I think I was trying to be very pragmatic. I was trying to, you know, address the hellacious year that 2020 was, and all its ups and downs, you know, and just take them straight and head on. But then I also wanted to talk about there are so many good things, because we didn't really get too far into the good things that had happened, you know, whether it's even just the tax base or, you know, breaking ground on a new hotel or all those, some of the little things and some of the bigger things. And we need to do that as a community, because we can get too focused on the negative. That's just kind of human nature when things are tough. So wanting to not paint an overly rosy picture, not saying everything's fine, because it's not. There's things we need to address. But not everything is in shambles. And so what can we do to accentuate the positive and build upon that while we directly deal with the negative elements of our current state and our previous state?
Mayor Doug Nichols, that's our time. I appreciate your time spending it with us, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much. I'm always glad to be on your show.
Arizona Edition is a production of KAWC, Colorado River Public Media. Questions or comments about the show are welcome. Send them to news@kawc.org. Past shows and this one are posted on our website, kawc.org. You can also access all KAWC programming through the KAWC app. I'm Lou Gumm. This is Arizona Edition on KAWC. Thanks for listening.